Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, this morning we've already heard quite a bit about US involvement in the Ukraine conflict. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. But aside from their role in these talks, there's a lot else going on domestically as President Trump approaches 100 days in office. To discuss Elon Musk stepping back from Doge, this week's food additives row, where things stand with tariffs and more, I'm joined by Simon Marks, Chief Correspondent of Feature Story News. Good morning to you, Simon.
Good morning to you, Philip.
Before we get into those other news stories, let's just, to begin, please, talk about President Trump and Vice President Vance's comments on the Ukraine talks overnight. Kyiv gets bombed and President Trump blames Zelensky for threatening the prospects of the peace talks.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, with every passing day, Donald Trump, and now actively assisted by J.D. Vance and also Secretary of State Marco Rubio, continue to put more pressure on Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, to accept immediately, without question, and without any face-to-face negotiations with the Russians, a draft peace proposal that the United States has circulated. And what is particularly sticking in Volodymyr Zelensky's craw is the American insistence that Ukraine must give up any ambitions that it has ever to recapture control of Crimea. And Volodymyr Zelensky, of course, last night, as the overnight attacks took place on Kyiv, killing at least 9 people, was in South Africa, hastily beat a retreat from an official visit there back to Ukraine in a move that I think was designed to communicate not only to the Ukrainian people that he obviously takes developments at home very seriously, but communicate to the White House that he is not simply going to roll over in this process. We heard President Trump within the last few days on several occasions falsely claiming again that it was Ukraine that started the war, not Russia. We've seen Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio indicate on multiple occasions over the last 10 days that the United States is just fed up with the minutiae of this entire negotiation. It doesn't want to get bogged down in arranging any kind of complicated peace arrangements for Ukraine. It wants this thing done and dusted so that the United States can avert its gaze in other directions. And they say that if essentially Volodymyr Zelensky doesn't cave to their requirements, they will walk away from the peacemaking process. Now, it's unclear if they mean they'll walk away from the process of trying to secure a simple 30-day ceasefire or just bag the entire aim to negotiate peace in Ukraine entirely. But either way, many analysts here view that as a gift for Vladimir Putin, because it is essentially, they argue, the American government saying to the Kremlin, you just need to hang on for a few more days. We're getting tired of this. We're probably going to throw our toys out of the pram, pack our bags and go home. And then we'll leave Ukraine to you.
Briefly, before we move on to other stuff, how is this playing domestically? Or has the Trump administration successfully flooded the zone with so much other stuff that Ukraine is just not going to get any attention?
Well, look, I don't think that Ukraine is a front burner issue for millions of Americans from coast to coast, although certainly on the east and west coasts, there are people, particularly, of course, here in Washington, D.C. and in New York, but also Ukrainian communities that are Ukrainian American communities that are very focused on all of this. But there's going to be very little public pressure applied to Donald Trump over this. The pressure that he's facing is going to come from Republicans in Congress, many of whom continue to insist that they absolutely support Ukraine's end game in this war. They want to see Russia repulsed. And there are Republican critics that are quietly telling the White House mostly, and in a couple of instances going public with their argument, that the United States needs to continue standing by Ukraine, and that the president is needs to stop advancing this completely false argument that it was Zelensky who started the war.
OK, let's turn to his row with the chairman of the Federal Reserve, his central banker, whom he called a loser. Has he backed away from that slightly?
Well, it's been classic Donald Trump. He's backed away from it slightly without completely backing away from it. I mean, Donald Trump is furious with Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and his anger and antipathy to Jerome Powell is not a new thing. I mean, he's been critical of his stewardship of the Fed for a long while, arguing that the Fed should have dropped interest rates earlier and should certainly be dropping them now in order to stimulate economic growth. But the Fed is an independent institution. Jerome Powell is serving a 10-year term. He is notionally not at the political whim of Donald Trump, even though the White House has been discussing internally how it would navigate the process of firing him. Yesterday, President Trump sort of stepped back from the more colourful language that he had used and said that he didn't mean in any way to puncture the independence of the Fed, but he still thought that Jerome Powell absolutely should be cutting interest rates to stimulate growth. So there is pressure from the White House on Mr. Powell, who insists that he will not prove susceptible to that kind of political pressure, that he's going to continue acting in a completely independent fashion. But it's got to be very difficult for him. I mean, even someone who was most able to put themselves in an independent frame of mind, to have the President of the United States on social media branding him a loser and unleashing the Make America Great Again crowd against him, that's got to really increase the pressure that Jerome Powell is feeling.
Also stepping back is Elon Musk. One day a week now going to be devoted to Doge. I'm speculating here, but I would imagine that the board of directors at Tesla said it's time to come back to the day job. Was this always going to happen?
Well, Elon Musk just a couple of weeks ago had dismissed as fake news reports that he was going to be stepping back from his service as the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, which of course is not a real government department, but has been given sweeping powers by President Trump to cut fraud and waste, as they call it, in federal government expenditure. But I think the catalyst for this were the quarterly results for Tesla for the first quarter of the year that saw its profits basically eviscerated, down 71%, far worse than market analysts anticipated. All of this being fueled, of course, by public fury towards Mr. Musk. Polls showing that 60% of the public disapproves of him, 58% of the public disapproves of the work that Doge, his so-called government department, has been doing, cutting waste, firing people, forcing their way into government departments, seizing enormous quantities of data, unrestrained at the time by President Donald Trump. So he says he's going to return to the helm at Tesla, although says he'll continue working for the president for 1 to 2 days a week until the point where President Trump tells him his work is done. Just in practical terms, I mean, he's a special government advisor, which means that he's only actually allowed to work for the US government for 130 days a year. Now, we're almost at the 100-day mark of the Trump administration. So depending on how Elon Musk is calculating the number of days that he's worked for the federal government, he may be running out of road anyway, but he certainly exacerbated the patience and tolerance of members of Donald Trump's cabinet, many of whom he has really challenging relationships with now because of the manner in which he sort of charged into all of these government agencies and sought to make cuts.
One of the most shocking first 100-day stories is the deportation of Kilmar Abrejo García to El Salvador, where he is now being held for no reason whatsoever in prison. What's the latest there?
Well, the White House continues to tough it out and so far shows absolutely no sign of honouring a 9-0 unanimous ruling by the US Supreme Court that Mr. Abrejo García, this 29-year-old father of four, living legally in Maryland, who within a matter of 72 hours in the middle of March was detained by the immigration authorities, stuck on a plane with hundreds of other people and suddenly found himself in that terrorist detention centre in El Salvador. The Supreme Court says the government's got to bring him home. They have to facilitate and effectuate, in the words of the ruling, Mr. Abrejo García's return to the United States and to his family. And the government at the moment, President Trump, personally absolutely insisting that that is not going to happen. So this is now a litmus test, a showdown between the White House and the judiciary. And there are many other court orders, not just relating to deportations, but to other matters that the White House is currently ignoring. It's going to be a massive test for the future of American democracy. Is the White House ultimately going to honor court rulings, or is it simply going to disregard them? It's already largely disregarding Congress in a bid to accumulate more executive power for Donald Trump. And as we head to the 100-day mark, that is perhaps the largest unresolved question here in Washington.
Indeed. Simon Marks, chief correspondent of Feature Story News, thank you very much.